From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In the midst of the worst public health crisis in recent memory, President Donald Trump took the time to warn Virginia's farmers that their governor wanted, quote, to take your Second Amendment and that there would be nobody, quote, guarding your potatoes. Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam responded, saying, I grew up on a Virginia farm, Mr. President. Our potatoes are fine. He added, as the only medical doctor among our nation's governors, I suggest you stop taking hydroxychloroquine. Gun owners across America stockpiled on firearms in the early days of the pandemic, while the rest of us were worried about toilet paper. Many of those have been on display at pro-Trump anti-lockdown protests in states like Michigan, wielded by flak-jacketed men. Now, a timely new film says to ardent proponents of the right to buy as many guns as possible, to stockpile military-grade weapons and ammunition and walk all around showing off such weapons of mass death, that, quote, you don't understand the Second Amendment. My guest is Jonathan Hennessy, filmmaker and documentarian. He's the author of several books addressing American history, including the United States Constitution, a graphic adaptation, Alexander Hamilton, The Graphic History of an American Founding Father, and The Gettysburg Address, a graphic adaptation, and more. He joins me to discuss his new documentary called You Don't Understand the Second Amendment. Welcome to the program, Jonathan.
Sonali, it's a great pleasure to be here. Nice to speak with you.
So you, in a minute, we'll actually watch the trailer and listen to the trailer of the documentary, but it seems as though you were approaching the Second Amendment, a topic that has been, you know, endlessly discussed, from the perspective of somebody who believes themselves to be a patriotic American who really, truly holds up the Constitution as a sacred document. Would that be accurate?
My first book, published in 2008, was like a graphic novel, a comic book style adaptation of the whole Constitution. And I definitely think that it is, you know, a revolutionary document and has, you know, is very much credited with giving us the freedoms that we do have.
So let's watch a trailer of the film, You Don't Understand the Second Amendment. And after we watch that, we'll tell you how you can see the film because it is available for free online.
So there's been another mass shooting. Each time one of these heart-wrenching atrocities takes place on American soil, it triggers in us the same set of predictable behaviors. Pre-scripted, almost. At this point, like the learned reactions of Pavlov's dogs. Yet all the thoughts and prayers, all the marches, all the hot-tempered cable news segments and journalistic think pieces ultimately crash out, exhausted of energy, against one seemingly immovable object. The Second Amendment. However, the Second Amendment isn't really the problem. The problem is with all the falsehoods we've been trained to think about it with. What if we've all just been, this whole time, simply looking at the Second Amendment the wrong way? A way the Founding Fathers never did, and never intended us to. What if both the pro-gun and anti-gun mania so easily observed in Americans today is just the result of decades and decades of accruing, slowly snowballing bad habits we've picked up? Like young children who were born with perfect posture, but gradually learn to slouch as they grow up. The Second Amendment doesn't have to be an insurmountable obstacle to common sense gun laws. Follow along with me here, and you'll finally see the Second Amendment for what it really is. It's not too late. You, as an American, could still have the open mind required to get back to healthy constitutional basics. So much of the innocent blood that continues to get spilled is very much because you don't understand the Second Amendment.
That's the voice of my guest, Jonathan Hennessy, who narrates the documentary You Don't Understand the Second Amendment. So, Jonathan, it seems as though a lot of the way in which the conversation around guns has evolved is based on the technology itself of guns being hugely different today than it was when the Second Amendment was written, right?
That's absolutely the case. And a big chunk of the documentary is devoted to that. And I'm glad you talked about it in a technological frame of reference, because this documentary really comes at the Second Amendment from, you know, what you might call a centrist position. I mean, this work really isn't about my personal opinion. It really offers a mountain of primary historical evidence from the generation that ratified and wrote the Constitution, and how the people of that era and even the decades afterwards, you know, conducted themselves, conducted their militias, and protected themselves in a time before professional police forces. And, you know, one of the arguments that you'll often hear from, you know, the side that's sort of the pro common sense gun laws frame of the argument is that we have this antiquated, you know, from 1791 amendment to the Constitution that has nothing to do with how firearm technology has advanced over the, you know, 220 years since the start of the Republic. Now, there's something important to that argument, but I really wouldn't forward it as an important way of looking at the Second Amendment. It's really about, even though firearms technology has advanced a lot, we can look back at how the founding fathers and the generation that, you know, wrote, ratified, and lived in early America, we can look at the kind of firearms that they used and what they used them for, and that gives us really a lot of answers on how we should approach it today.
So you have a lengthy part of your documentary focusing on cannons, on Revolutionary era cannons and how they worked, and how, you know, I suppose how they contrast with those weapons today that fire hundreds and hundreds of rounds without having to do much more than hold the gun and press the trigger.
Yeah, Sonali, you're exactly right. So, you know, we are, when we're talking about the early Americans, when we're talking about the early Republic, and the kind of people who wanted a Second Amendment and the kind of people who, you know, this was written for, there's something important that we are not talking about cavemen. So we're talking about people that lived, yes, centuries ago, but who left a lot of historical evidence about what they thought, what they believed, and what they did, right? So, you know, one of the most important pieces of evidence that the original generation of the Second Amendment left behind are probate records and inventories of estates from back when the Second Amendment was a new law, a new part of the Constitution. And what those documents tell us is that, yes, I mean, these early Americans did keep a fair amount of firearms, because again, this is a time before professional police forces. So, but what they did not keep, not on an individual basis, not in their homes, not in their towns, not to protect themselves from invasion or from the federal government becoming tyrannical. We know from the evidence that early Americans did not keep weapons of war like artillery pieces in their homes. They kept shotguns, handguns, and rifles when they kept them at all, when they were allowed to keep them at all. And so what that means for our modern debate is that even these sort of street legal, you know, what the media likes to call assault rifles, and what the pro-gun, the gun lobby absolutely goes ballistic when they hear that term. But the kinds of weapons that were used at Sandy Hook and Las Vegas, those street legal semi-automatic weapons are actually more deadly than the cannon and the mortars and the howitzers that the people who wrote the Second Amendment used as weapons of war. And so there is no doubt that legislating and controlling the safety of these weapons are not covered by an individual's right to keep and bear firearms.
Now, those who argue for gun control say that because the Second Amendment discusses very explicitly a well-regulated militia, that gun owners that are not part of such a militia ought to be able to be subject to gun control laws. What do you say to that?
It's interesting. So what is often overlooked when we're talking about the militia is that, you know, there are laws today and that, you know, it's in the federal code that just about, you know, every able-bodied adult, certainly every adult male, is part of the militia. But back when the Second Amendment was a freshly minted amendment to the Constitution, there were huge swaths of the population that did not enjoy those rights. As we know, and as we often need to be reminded, the Constitution as it was originally formulated, right, it for people who actually qualified to vote, which wasn't a large number of people, and the KPFK listeners certainly don't need to be reminded of this, but it was mostly white male property owners, right? But the Constitution barely protected, just went the farthest protecting their right to vote for their member of the House of Representatives. It didn't protect their right to vote for senators. You know, everyday people back in the 1780s, 1790s did not vote for senators, and their vote for president wasn't even cast because of the Electoral College in many places. So a document that curtails so much political power for an average person, it's absurd to argue that you didn't have the power to even vote for Senate and vote for president, but that you would have the ability to use firearms to take over the government. I mean, that's just a level of political power that the document just doesn't extend to individuals on that basis. And the whole point of a militia is that a militia is something that's under civilian control. There's a chain of command there. It doesn't mean that you can just pick up arms at your own initiative and start fighting the government or fighting anyone. If you consider yourself part of the militia, then, you know, every single state constitution in the Union from the time of the early republic to today says that the elected governor of your state is your commander in chief. So being part of the militia means that you are part of a chain of command. And there are officers and a commander-in-chief making decisions about how the militia should conduct itself way over above the individual level.
How much has the Second Amendment really been tested, legally speaking, in particular by the U.S. Supreme Court? This is an amendment that, because there is so much disagreement in the United States, much of it, of course, fomented by the National Rifle Association and these days, of course, Republicans like President Trump. It is an amendment, or it is a part of the Constitution that one would imagine would have been tested quite strongly at the Supreme Court. Has it?
Another great question. The very first thing we should all remember about the Second Amendment, and really about the whole first 10 amendments that today we call the Bill of Rights, is that these were formulated and added to the Constitution because they weren't controversial things. They weren't codified when they first wrote the Constitution. There were many people early in the generation that made and ratified the Constitution that thought we didn't need any of these amendments. But they were meant to be uncontroversial. There's very specific historical reasons for that. There's some very interesting political sleight of hand that the man who's remembered as the father of the Constitution, James Madison, there are very specific reasons why he wrote the Second Amendment, why he wrote it the way he did. But it was so uncontroversial, Sonali, that for the first 200 years of the Republic, there were only three Supreme Court cases that ever came up about it. It's only become controversial very recently in history, you know, tracking with some very specific anti-government events and like you said, the changes that came about in the power structure behind gun lobby groups like the NRA. It's only become controversial recently, and there have been There have been some very important Supreme Court of the United States cases about it lately, but really no earlier than 2008.
Is it possible to preserve the Second Amendment and to enact laws that curtail the ownership of especially the most violent weapons of mass destruction?
This is exactly what I'm talking about, Sonali, because that is the tradition of American history, the tradition that the Second Amendment was meant to perpetuate. The individuals back then, again, no professional police forces and no standing army. There were a great many people early in the Republic who didn't want to have a professional military. You know, people who are Second Amendment nuts today love to put, like, you know, warrior stickers and all these sort of, like, they adopt all these bellicose symbols on, you see them on pickup trucks and so on, skulls and, like, the symbols of the Punisher. They've gathered around these warrior symbols, but the reason the Second Amendment was written is because people didn't want warriors in America. They wanted citizen soldiers who would be trained and ready if they were needed, when they were needed, but not a professional army standing around ready to invade other countries and ready to go on military adventures at the drop of a hat. That totally stands against everything most of the founding fathers believed in.
So when we look at the way in which this argument and this debate has been so distorted, what would you attribute that to? Is it fair to say that there are gun manufacturers who profit tremendously from the sale of guns? I mean, in fact, there are a minority of Americans who continue to stockpile weapons. It's not as though there are more and more Americans buying weapons. There's actually a certain number that keeps buying weapons. Is it a profit motive or is there a political motive for why politicians continue to encourage this, you know, I want to say lunacy?
It really is lunacy, Sonali, because if you really take the deep look at American history and American law that my documentary, You Don't Understand the Second Amendment, that it does, then you very quickly see how absurd the arguments made by the gun lobby today are in the framework of American history. And yes, there is a profit motive, but I believe that it's more than that. It's a, sort of a perfect storm of the profit motive of the gun manufacturers, and then kind of a grander anti-government regulation project that, you know, that power-hungry people in politics, in think tanks and so on, have really seen that they can get a lot of traction for their anti-government ideas by playing into this. And that's, you know, really began in the 1960s, 1970s. And these are some very cunning, canny people, Sonali. They have been incredibly successful at framing the debate and at pushing their narrative. As a matter of fact, they've been so successful at it that people who are on the other side of the argument, progressives, leftists, liberals, common sense gun laws people, the NRA and the other groups have pulled the wool over their eyes so completely that, you know, that those center and left of center groups don't even think to question what the right says the Second Amendment means. And that's exactly what they need to do.
So where can people find your documentary and why did you make it available for free online?
Well, like I said, the other part of the argument has been, you know, extremely crafty. They're extremely well funded. They've really flooded the zone with tons of free content that pushes their agenda. And there are people, I'm not claiming to be the only person who's unearthed these, you know, this historical evidence from archives, but, you know, the people who do tend to have this information at their fingertips, you know, they lock it up in $30 or $40 hardcovers, or they write in, you know, very obscure law journals and history books, that history articles that the average reader doesn't even know to look for. And even if they found them, would have a very hard time accessing them and reading them. So we needed something as dynamic and as widely available as possible. And, you know, we're living in an era of free streaming media, you know, during this coronavirus crisis, kind of more than ever. So it really had to be free and available to everyone. And it's on the internet. You can stream it anytime. There's nothing to sign up for, nothing to register for, nothing to download. It's just there on YouTube and the ad-free Vimeo platform. And the easiest way to find it is just to go to understandthesecondamendment.com.
That's understandthesecondamendment.com. Do you think that our lawmakers are going to be able to be moved on this? Because even when there are mass shootings that you see move members of Congress, of course, there's always a sector of lawmakers who just offer up thoughts and prayers and empty rhetoric. But those who do try to do something about it end up being thwarted at every turn. If state-level laws are passed, they are overturned by state Supreme Court justices that might be appointed by Republicans. Republican legislatures fight them at every turn. It seems just unbelievably hard to get any policy change, you know, at any level, whether the federal or the state level.
Sonali, I think the great challenge is not so much passing the legislation, because anytime you look at, you know, credible polling, most American citizens, most of the people who are being polled are in favor of common sense gun laws. They're not in favor of locking all of, you know, the government seizing all firearms, but they are in favor of the kinds of measures that groups like, you know, Moms Demand and the Brady Campaign and so on, that most Americans are in favor of those changes. So the real challenge is not passing the legislation, although that's hard enough. The problem is the legal challenges that come up to that legislation. So it's one thing to pass the laws, and it's one thing to keep those laws on the books. And that's where the challenge comes in, because as long as Americans, as long as we take our eyes off of what's happening in the federal courts, and as long as we allow the gun lobby and these other groups to keep perverting what American history really says about the Second Amendment, the easier it is for these judges at the state level and at the federal level to, you know, be seen by the rest of us as like, these are the gods from up on high who know what these things really mean. And so, you know, they can challenge these gun laws by basically using this constitutional interpretation doctrine called originalism, right? Which is supposed to mean that you're paying attention to what the founding fathers actually meant, so far as we were able to ascertain that from history. But their history is wrong. Their history is deeply flawed. One might say that it's deeply flawed on purpose. But the more we propagate the truth out there, the harder it will be for these judges to challenge the laws based on flawed history.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Jonathan, for joining us today. That website is, again, understandingthesecondamendment.com, where my audience can access the film for free that we've been discussing. Good luck to you.
Sonali, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you so much.
My guest has been Jonathan Hennessy. He's a filmmaker and documentarian as well as author. And we've been talking about his brand new film. It is out for free on the internet for anybody to watch. It's called You Don't Understand the Second Amendment. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.